This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Welcome to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanesan. On the back of the COVID-19 pandemic, big pharma and vaccines have been shot into the public spotlight. And while COVID-19 is dangerous and disruptive, it isn't the biggest killer in the country. Heart disease is. Today on The Breakfast Grill, we have Servier, the second largest French pharmaceutical and known for cardiovascular and cardiovascular-related drugs in the EU, but now also branching and growing in the oncology sector. Servier has been in Malaysia for about 24 years at this point, but isn't as well known as US or British names like Pfizer or AstraZeneca. Today, I speak with Shetesh Pandey, Servier Malaysia's general manager, on Malaysia's importance to Servier, but also Servier's current presence in Malaysia and plans going forward. Shetesh, welcome to The Breakfast Grill.
Thank you very much, Roshan. It's a great pleasure for me to be over here on the BFM Breakfast Grill.
I've noticed that Servier is spending a lot more money and also a lot more resources on oncology. Some big acquisitions recently, I think about at least 50% of R&D is spent on oncology. And also, I think the target is €1 billion from oncology revenue by 2025. So right now, cardiovascular and cardiovascular-related are Servier's big revenue generators. Going forward, is the next big thing oncology?
Well, I would first like to say over here is that cardiology and hypertension will still remain an important business domain for Servier, because simply put it like this, the patient need is very high in these disease domains. So globally and specifically in Malaysia, cardiohypertension will remain one of the important axes. But yes, like what you rightly mentioned, oncology is one of the important branches in which globally the company is going. So we have a lot of in-house research going on in the facility in Paris, where, yes, more than 50% of the money is invested into research for oncology. We have had some acquisitions. 3 years ago, there was a company called Shire, whose oncology business has been acquired. And we have two great assets. One is in pancreatic cancer, where the patient need is very high, and one is in leukemias. And recently, we have acquired one more company, which is called as Agios, and more products in oncology would be coming to meet the unmet patient's needs. It's true. But again, I would like to say cardio, diabetes, depression, venous diseases will remain important for us.
Now, speaking of drugs and treatments, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about the ongoing mediator case. Now, this has been in court for about 10 years or so at this point. And Servier, among other things, has been accused of putting profits ahead of patients' lives with regards to this drug. It has been accused, or at least been cited, to cause between 500 to 2,000 related deaths over three decades before being taken off the shelves back in 2009 or 2010. Now, there's been some new news here, because about 2 weeks ago, a Paris court found Servier guilty of manslaughter and deception over the mediated drug and fined the company €2.7 million. I understand that Servier is currently appealing and the process is ongoing. But overall, what have the implications from the mediator case been in terms of safety? Shetesh, is there anything you can shed some light into this for us?
Well, first and foremost, like what you mentioned, the case is still ongoing, and there has been an appeal that has been made against the decision. And as the case is still ongoing, it's not possible for me, as you can imagine, to make any specific comments on this case. But this is, of course, important for us. But if your question is related on a broader context to patient safety in general, of course, for pharmaceutical industry in general, and for us in Servier, patient safety is no doubt very, very important, because indeed patients are at the heart of our actions in pharmaceuticals. What we do is, of course, on one hand, we sell medicines, but on the other hand, the real satisfaction that we get is when we see the drug is being effective and safe. So we have rigorous pharmacovigilance systems in place. We have compliance in place, and we are upgrading these systems year after year so as to ensure that they match the most stringent regulatory authorities' requirements, and ultimately to ensure that whatever medicines we are providing are safe for patient consumption and, of course, effective.
Now, let's talk about the business side of things for a little bit here. Asia represents around 22% of group revenue, while China contributes, I think, a bulk of that, quite a substantial bulk of that. Malaysia's revenue is roughly around 0.8% of global revenue by some estimates. With that in mind, I guess, where does Malaysia fit in Xavier's Asian strategies? Are we an important market to the company at this juncture?
Of course, I would say Malaysia is an important market for us, and we have been present over here for a long time. I mean, as a subsidiary since 24 years, but some of our products have been available since the early 70s through a distributor. What makes Malaysia attractive? Of course, in terms of the population, yes, maybe only around 32 million, so it may look smaller. But what is also important is the strategic location of Malaysia, which makes it very attractive for medical tourism. We know in Penang, Melaka, Kuching, and maybe other cities, we have lots of inbound medical tourism. So that makes Malaysia attractive. Even more than that, if I may say, is our equally as important as that, Malaysia has very good healthcare infrastructure. If you look at our private hospitals, I would say they are very good. Government hospitals, I mean, I have worked in other countries, and I must say that our government hospitals, teaching institutions, clinic kesihatans are good. The doctors who are practicing in these are very good quality doctors. What does that mean? That means for us, it becomes an opportunity to conduct, say, clinical trials. These doctors who are academically very good, we can take their expertise to run, say, clinical trials or make them a part of some advisory boards. So that also makes Malaysia an attractive market. And last but not the least, sometimes, again, it's sad to say, but the unmet medical need is high. The disease domains which we operate, there are many patients who are diabetic, hypertension, having depression. So that makes, in a way, attractive.
Those are some nice sentiments overall, but how do you demonstrate that in the country, right? Are you running clinical trials in the country, or do you have any other, beyond the sales part of it, are you doing anything else within the Malaysian borders?
Absolutely. And thank you for that question. In fact, apart from, of course, the sales to meet the unmet patient needs, I mean, that's our main objective, to work with healthcare professionals to meet unmet needs of the patients. But apart from that, yes, we have run around 3 to 4 clinical trials in the last 8 to 9 years in Malaysia. That would be one of our contributions. The second contribution, if I may say, also would be related to local manufacturing. So we do a local manufacturing, not for the entire portfolio, around 10% of our portfolio is manufactured with the help of a contract manufacturer based in Malacca. So that helps to stimulate, of course, the local economy and the jobs. And the third way, which I would say we have been contributing apart from sales, would be really developing talent locally. Malaysia has great talent. So most of our senior managers have joined in the company and grown through the different ladders. And what I'm also extremely proud to say this is in the last few years, 4 people from Servier Malaysia have been transferred to our global headquarters in France. And today they are in leading positions in the company at a global level. But yes, so we have contributed to Malaysia, but I must say it's been a symbiotic relationship. Malaysia has also contributed a lot to us.
You mentioned medical tourism earlier, and medical tourism is one of those sectors that's been impacted by the pandemic. Maybe you can give us a little bit of a gauge of how COVID-19 has affected Xavier Malaysia's business in the country.
Yes, so medical tourism is one important aspect for the pharmaceutical industry, and of course for us also, because we are having medicines which are in the chronic disease segment. So a rough estimation would be around 8 to 10% of the private sector business comes from medical tourism. That's for survey, but it varies from country or company to company. And since the borders are closed, I mean, that is straight away impacts our performance. So that would be one impact, I would say, of COVID-19 on medical tourism. But frankly, what can you and me do? Let's just hope for the borders to open and patients to come back. I hope these patients are taking some good treatment wherever they are. But COVID-19 has also impacted in another way, and which I believe is changing and should change. Patients who are already, say, diabetic or hypertensive are taking their medicines. But new patient diagnosis is probably reduced, particularly during the first MCO. Patients were afraid to go to their doctors because of the risk of catching infections. And this is something I believe, I mean, not only for pharma market in general, but for the patient's own health, they should go for regular diagnosis. Also, what we have seen is we have a drug in a probiotic for diarrhea. And when it comes to so-called less severe diseases, maybe patients don't go to the doctors. And that is something which is changing now. And I hope that as this changes, the impact of COVID-19 will become lesser and lesser, and patients' health will become better and better.
I've been speaking with Chetaj Panse, Sevier Malaysia's General Manager. You're listening to The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9.
You are listening to The BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanesan. This morning, I'm speaking with Chetaj Panse, Sevier Malaysia's General Manager. Chetaj, we earlier talked about the presence in Malaysia. You have a contract manufacturer in Malaysia, but no direct manufacturing, if I've got that correct. I think Sevier has 16 production facilities in 11 countries, mostly, if not all, in Europe. And I think you noted about 10% of the local production is made within the country. Are there any plans, though, to build manufacturing facilities in Malaysia like has been done by Indian firms, Ranbaxy or Biocon, or even America's Sterling Drug?
I think that's a good question. But if you look at the broader perspective, on first hand, yes, we are doing local manufacturing through a contract manufacturer. But I must say over here that manufacturing in Malaysia for us is slightly more expensive than getting the drugs from France because of the economies of scales, the amount of quantity that we manufacture over here, whereas Paris is manufacturing for the entire globe. So it doesn't become much profitable, or otherwise we have to increase the price, which also we don't want. So that is why, because the quantities are less, we don't have such plans at this point of time to start a manufacturing plant in Malaysia.
Would it make more sense? Would it be possible to build a facility that catered to regional demand, or is that also out of bounds?
I think it's a very good question. But today what happens is, take a country like Indonesia. I must first say over here, I don't claim to be an expert for Indonesian market, but I know that they are also requiring local manufacturing in Indonesia. But now imagine if Indonesia starts accepting Malaysian manufactured drugs, or for that matter, even vice versa, Malaysian Ministry of Health gives some local preferential treatment if the drug is locally manufactured, and they give that treatment to Indonesia. So if ASEAN could come together and have this kind of reciprocity, if I may say, I don't know if the right word, if they can recognize each other, and then the volumes will become big, and that would make it more attractive to manufacture locally.
So right now, it's really down to a fragmentation issue and an economies of scale problem?
Absolutely.
Last week, AstraZeneca entered into a partnership with Sanyo University to establish what they call a health innovation hub here in Malaysia. So basically, this is something that's not a direct manufacturing facility, but looks at basically value in terms of innovation and things like that. Is that something, a non-production facility, is that something that Sevier could build here in Malaysia or bring into the country?
That's a very interesting point that you are mentioning. And like what I said, one of the great strengths that we have is the good quality of talent that is over here, good quality of database that is over here. So what we are looking at more and more is to have more real-world evidence studies, which are conducted with the Malaysian doctors. And that were in that, if you talk about, say, investments, in these cases, the investments come from our global headquarters in terms of real-world evidence studies, which will be done in Malaysia. So that is what we are doing. And apart from that, yes, we could think about these aspects, but to be frank, we don't have any concrete at this point of time.
Now, Malaysia moved up three places in the World Bank's Doing Business 2020 rankings. Now, of course, we have to take note that this was released before the pandemic last year. Malaysia ranked 12 out of 190 economies. You've been here for 5 years. Is this reflective of your own experience in Malaysia, or is there more friction in the pharmaceutical business here in terms of the operating landscape? Maybe it's because of the safety concerns, there are always going to be more regulatory engagements.
Well, I would say that in my last 5 years, if I look at them, I won't say that I have faced a lot of barriers as far as doing business is concerned. So overall, if I may say, yes, Malaysia has been a friendly country to do business. So on that aspect, I don't see there are any major barriers. Regulatory-wise, if you see, especially for, say, devices, sometimes we would like more clear guidelines in terms of timelines for registrations. Every company likes their drugs to be registered fast, and sometimes, yeah, it takes around 18 months, which could be a bit long. So there are a few things which always any country would try to improve. But by and large, I would say, no, Malaysia is a good place to do this.
So you talked about drug approvals there, about 18 months on average, was that right?
Yes.
Other than that, have your engagements with the National Pharmaceutical Regulatory Agency, or more commonly known as NPRA, have they been generally quite smooth, or are there other things that could be improved in terms of the bureaucracy?
Globally speaking, our interactions with NPRA have been quite good, I would say. I mean, in the other sense, we never faced any major barriers with NPRA. But of course, like what I said, it sometimes takes a bit long for a drug to be registered. This being said, there are now priority reviews which are ongoing. That means if a drug is already approved by the US FDA and European medicines agencies, we can get a fast-track approval. Right now, we don't have any product in this kind of stage. They also have priority reviews for patients who are having a strong unmet medical need. But what we would expect as a pharma company is that the drug registration processes become more and more faster.
Now, overall in Malaysia, I'm going to get into the different segments in just a second, but from a macro point of view, what are your plans in Malaysia for the next 5 years? Is there a ballpark plan in place?
In terms of plans, I would like to say into two and three aspects. The first aspect would be, of course, to ensure that our current portfolio, where there are a lot of unmet patient needs, this portfolio increases. I give you an example. Let's say hypertension. In hypertension, 1 in 3 adults in Malaysia is having hypertension. The latest guidelines mention that more than half of them are not even detected. So you imagine that if all these patients start getting detected, you talk about the market will automatically grow. But more than that, ultimately, the patient's health will improve. So what can we do as a pharma company? Patients are at the heart of our actions. We cannot go directly to the patients. But we try to do activities to work along with healthcare professionals to ensure that the awareness and the diagnosis increases. So our objective in the coming years would be to work closely with healthcare professionals, patient associations, to ensure that this awareness diagnosis increases. Health will improve, and ultimately, yes, it will help our growth as well. A second point also would be to look at new products. So to look at new products coming from our global company in the field of oncology that we've mentioned, we are also looking at regional or local in-licensing deals if they are possible, particularly in the field of diabetes or other disease segments. That could be an interesting option. And the third part related to this would be, of course, in-licensing deal. To give a concrete example, 3 years ago, we had an in-licensing deal with a French company called as Bioprotex, where it was their product, but there was a good scope, and it's a worldwide probiotic. It was not available in Malaysia, and we have an in-licensing deal over here. So we could also look at that in the coming year.
Right. And speaking of your products and your portfolio, what is the revenue split between the public and private segments here in Malaysia in terms of the business that you do?
So it's around 80-20. 80% is in the private sector and 20% is in the public sector.
How big is your generics business here?
Now, to be very honest, we don't have any generic business in Malaysia. So most of them are brands, and most of them are medicines which requiring a prescription.
So we've seen in Malaysia a push towards more generic drugs over the last few years for cost reasons. Is this part of the hurdle? Because right now you've got an 80-20 split, right? Is that a hurdle, the price point that comes with more brand name drugs as opposed to generic?
To be very honest, my simple answer would be yes.
So it is a part of the hurdle there. Are there any concerted efforts, I guess, to build inroads into public sector, or are you going to just take that and focus on private sector instead?
No, I mean, public sector is important because they are playing an important role in the health of the patients. And that is why even some of our original branded drugs, we are very much present and we are supplying to the government hospitals. And of course, we give them at a price which is much more lower than what we are selling in the private sector. So yes, we do have medicines in the government sector to meet the patient's unmet needs over there. But sometimes you have a generic if the price is too low because we are manufacturing in France and importing, it doesn't become beneficial for us.
Now, let's take a look at your product segments in Malaysia, right? So cardiovascular and hypertension and diabetes, I think that make up a bulk of your portfolio. Oncology is a growing segment, as I mentioned, the 3 acquisitions over the last few years. Also, sure. 50% of R&D being spent on a global level. What's the rough segmental revenue split in Malaysia between your top products or top segments? So
in top segments, I would say cardio hypertension is around 50%. Diabetes is around 35%. venous diseases is around 7 to 8%. And then we have an important segment also, which is depression. And I do believe that moving forward, mental health will become more and more important. And we are also working actively and closely with the psychiatrists for this product in depression.
So in Malaysia, cardiovascular and hypertension and related products are still the majority of your portfolio here and, and revenue. But with the growth in your focus, Servier's focus in oncology, are you seeing that growth here in Malaysia as well? Are more hospitals taking up your treatments and your protocols and your drugs?
Of course. I mean, the first drug that will come in Malaysia, unfortunately, is taking a bit more of time, I must say, and because it's mainly related to some supply chain issues and registrations, but the drug is in pancreatic cancer. We did meet some of the oncologists over here, and the need seems to be very high. So moving forward to answer your question, yes, oncology will start taking a bigger and bigger pie, particularly leukemias and pancreatic cancer. But this being said, cardiovascular and hypertension, our current portfolio, I still feel will remain an important part. So for example, in the next 5 years, I still feel oncology may take around 5%, but the remaining 95% will still remain our current business.
So neuropsychiatry segment is currently small, around 3%, but it's seeing strong growth. Is there friction for growing this in Malaysia, considering that, you know, there's a general Asian stigma around mental health?
And this is true, that there is an Asian stigma, particularly for mental health and for depression. But I guess that this is gradually changing, and we are also trying to do some activities, of course, always along working with the psychiatrist to ensure that the awareness about depression improves and patients go to consult their psychiatrist. So today, in terms of our business, it's a small arm of our business, but it is an arm of our business which is growing by more than 20%. And I hope that in the years to come, more and more patients will start going through the healthcare professionals to take professional advice for depression. And that would also make them feel better and help the markets grow.
Now, I'd like to just wrap up on this point here, Sitesh. When we take a look at the overall COVID-19, I think has created a lot of pharma awareness, right, around healthcare, pharmaceutical business. It seems like to be a rising tide that lifts overall awareness for the business. I wonder from Sivia's point of view, though, does COVID-19 provide an opportunity? It sounds like COVID-19 has disrupted a lot of the business so far, but is there room for Sivia in the overall value chain, not necessarily for the vaccines directly, but for post-COVID-19 treatments, where we're hearing about side effects and things like long COVID? Is this something that Sivia has any inklings towards?
So if your question is related directly to what kind of treatments we have for COVID-19 and its associated things, the short answer would be no, we are not into this anti-infective segment.
Sitesh, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you very much, Roshan. It has been a pleasure for me to participate in this breakfast grill.
And also, thank you to the French Embassy for connecting us with Sevier. I've been speaking with Sitesh Pansay, Sevier Malaysia's General Manager, and you've been listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanisan for BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.